The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time for the Monday Night Raw after show here on Wrestling Inc. And if we got a show for you, we've got King of the Ring, Queen of the Ring, and CM Punk told a lie. That's right. We're going to tell you what that lie was in just a little bit. That's a tease, ladies and gentlemen. Before we get into all that, allow me to introduce the crew. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by Jimmy Corderas and Justin Labar. I even got the pointing directions right this time. Justin Labar, how you doing, fella?
I'm all right, fella. How are you?
I was at the Tom Brady roast last night, so I am ready to roast people today.
Were you really?
Oh, come on.
I was there. Yeah, I got to go. It was super fun. Yeah, it was a good time. Those shows, I love roasts. They're fun. But
were you DJing it? What were you doing?
No, the DJ was really good too. I was a little upset. You know, usually us DJs, when you go, you like to see the DJ fail, so you can be like, "Oh, this guy sucks. I should have got this gig." But he was pretty good, so I was like, "Shoot, maybe they hired the right guy."
I hate to sound like the old fart here, but I miss the old Dean Martin roasts. If for those out there who don't know what I'm talking about, Google it, kids.
I got to pause you, Jimmy, because on Friday they started talking about all sorts of stuff from the 70s that I didn't get, and all these old references, Glenn and Matt, and man, the whole thing was comments from the 70s. Justin, I didn't get a single thing they were talking about.
Yeah, when you do a podcast with Glenn, you need a pop culture time machine at times.
But Jimmy, speaking of the old roasts, how are you doing?
Oh, speaking of roasts, my goodness, this weekend, Greek Easter, celebrated big time with lamb on the spit and all kinds of stuff. A few nice little stogies. It wasn't Greek stogies because they don't make them very well. It's maybe Cuban, that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, we had it was a great weekend, of course. A lot of big news for WWE. They had Backlash in France. And before we talk about that, by the way, thank you, everyone, for joining us here. Thank you to everyone who tuned into the post-Backlash after show. You've been saying you wanted it for a long time. We gave it to you. And from what I can tell, the numbers looked pretty good. Pretty good, Jimmy. I think that's your doing. So I'll give you all the credit for that. So thank you guys for tuning into that. Thank you for letting us know what you thought. If you didn't get a chance to see it, hit the like, share, subscribe buttons, and then let us know. Give it to Triple J. Let us know how you felt. I thought that, I mean, the crowds in other countries, Justin, are always incredible. They're always fun. And this was their biggest gate ever, they said, or something.
Biggest gate for an arena show.
Biggest gate for an arena show ever. I mean, this is a show that Backlash typically is a throwaway show. They've turned it into absolute gold.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good card on paper, but the crowd just elevated the show that much more, playing along the way they did. But I mean, the match is really good. You know, I mean, I really think Damian Priest versus Jey Uso, again, most of this card of these champions, you're like, all right, these are first time title defenses for Priest, first time title defenses for Cody. You know, it's hard for you to really get lost in your imagination thinking they have a chance to lose. But that said, there were points in that match, particularly with Jay and Damian, where I was like, wait a minute. Maybe Priest is a transitional champion. Maybe Priest just cashing the Money in the Bank just so they added heat to the whole Punk Drew thing. Maybe, like, maybe because Rhea's hurt, maybe Drew and the Judgment Day, they're going in a different direction. Like, I mean, so, you know, credit to those two specifically, that match, but the entire show was a lot of fun. And I'll tell you what, tight six match card, over before dinner time here in the Eastern time zone. Let them all be that way. Put them all in France. Residency for the French. Let's go.
Yeah, Jimmy, this was a – I love – Justin made a good point. These tight cards, just keep them nice and tight. Everything is supposed to be where it is. You watch them. They're fun. But, again, it shows the power of a crowd and how a show that otherwise might be something you just kind of throw away, when the crowd is into it like that, it's hard not to get into it the way the crowd is.
No, you're absolutely right. And I've been privileged to be in front of a lot of great crowds in my time with the WWE. And that crowd on Saturday, I don't recall ever hearing such a crowd that for the sustained amount of time that it was. It wasn't like people talk about the moment at WrestleMania 18 between Rock and Hogan, which was insane. They almost blew the roof off the Sky Dome. I will call it the Sky Dome. I'm not going to call it by that name. It goes by now. It's always going to be the Sky Dome to me. Mm-hmm. But ask anybody who was there. It was insane. And then I've been to other countries where you got very similar responses and very loud responses. You lose it kind of in open air stadiums because the sound kind of travels up, so you lose that. But inside an enclosed, it sounded like 80,000 people inside that building on Saturday. And like you said, it does make that everything feel that much more special when you hear a crowd like that. It elevates not only the adrenaline level in the talent and you know, builds them up and they start to perform. And we saw it on Saturday. Everybody that's involved in the show, everybody from the commentary, from Michael Cole to Corey Graves, everybody felt that fever and it was running through. I got goosebumps just watching the show. And like I said, I'm happily retired, sitting back in my chair, watching it from home. But when I watched on Saturday, I said, boy, that was one time I wish I was actually there.
Yeah, when Michael Cole's Apple Watch is going off with safety alerts saying that it's too loud in this building, take precaution. That's going to tell you something. It wasn't just his. Apparently, everybody had an iPhone if this was going on. I mean, that just speaks volumes right there.
And really quickly on your point, Justin, about the match with Damian Priest and Jey Uso, those false finishes that really got people. Hats off to Dan, the referee, for that one, because it really means a lot to have a referee who his cadence and his count don't give it away. Mm-hmm. And I talk about this with Brian Hebner a lot on our podcast, is, and you know, those little tells that we notice, and I'm not going to tell anybody what they are, but he didn't have any. So that helped make the magic in there. So, you know, hats off to him. I just wanted to give him his kudos.
Yeah. I don't say I see the tells, but there are just certain times you can tell by the referee, this isn't going to be it. You can just feel it in the way they're counting sometimes.
Yeah, when you can tell after they've hit two that they're scared to death of having their hand even come close to the mat because they know this is not the finish, rather than just trusting the talent and just being consistent on your motion.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
I remember back in the day we were told, you keep your counts consistent. If they don't kick out, that's on them, not you. That's the old boss used to tell us that, but then he forgets that yeah, there might be a little bit of heat on us from the boys.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some times when some wrestlers weren't happy about a referee count for that very reason. But I've also been on the call. It was on a Botchamania, whatever it's called, when the referee did stop at 2.5 and the kickout never happened. And then that looked even worse. So, yeah.
I know. Rocking a hard place.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Well, going to France, I think, was a great move by WWE. I think it's great that they're traveling to all sorts of new places. They're going for WrestleMania 41. It's been decided they're going to Las Vegas, which I'm excited about because that's just a little car drive away for old Jack Farmer. Mm-hmm. I might have to head on over, and I feel like Vegas is just going to be such an awesome city for WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing is it's on Easter weekend, and Dave Meltzer said Vegas wanted it because they wanted them in when it traditionally is not a good weekend for tourism. They'll have a great weekend because lots of people are going to come in. So that was the reason that it was that weekend. WWE just wanted to make sure that they were away from the Final Four. There were two dates noted. That was the first weekend of May, and then it was Easter weekend. Traditionally, WWE has always avoided Easter, but the city of Las Vegas wanted Easter. That's the deal. I'm sure they're super excited about Allegiant Stadium. Jimmy, this is pretty late in the year for WrestleMania, coming close to May, Easter weekend. But I think it, in so many ways, it's smart because if it's a bad weekend in Vegas, typically that means wrestling's going to take over Vegas when they're there.
Well, it absolutely will. Like you saw it in Philadelphia, it took over the entire city. And when it was first announced at the Kentucky Derby, that the date of WrestleMania 41, and I thought, wow, that's odd day to pick it on Easter Sunday. That kind of Easter weekend, it didn't kind of resonate with me. And I could try to figure out, you know, why the reasoning was. And that makes sense. Now it makes sense that Las Vegas probably not their biggest tourist time of the year, let's put it that way, because a lot of people were going to be celebrating Easter and they like to celebrate it at home. But already I've had feelers from the missus who wants to take the trip out to Vegas this year for Easter. So I guess it makes sense by that standard.
Yeah, you know, Justin, Killer Demons is saying doubt many people watch night two. I kind of disagree. I have a feeling that if anything, it'll be almost like a Thanksgiving football kind of thing. Like, I think this is going to work out great for WWE. I think it's a smart move.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. First off, you know, yes, obviously, yes, a lot of people in the world celebrate Easter. But the 80,000 people that want to go to WrestleMania are still going to go to WrestleMania. They're going to just, you know, and that's going to be fine because a lot of those people are probably on then an Easter / spring break from work or from school. So that allows them to not have to rush back on a Monday morning or worry about missing something. So there's that, you know, in terms of people watching at home, Night 2 Killer Demons. Yeah, this will turn into, you'll have family over and it'll turn into a kind of a gathering, a watch party of such for the second night of Mania. Obviously, Easter bounces around on the calendar. You know, it's different every year. Obviously, it was super early this year. I think, you know, yeah, it's Easter and that might be a down weekend traditionally for Vegas. So this will be a prop up for them. But I think more so WWE is testing the waters. Not to say, oh, we're going to chase Easter weekend and have Mania every year. I think the testing waters of can we do it later? One, as you mentioned, to get away from competing against the Final Four as they've done for years, which takes their toll on them for the weekend and for the Monday Night Raw. They're competing usually with Major League Baseball, opening up their opening day around that same time. So I think moving later, they're testing to see, okay, if we move later in the year, how does that look? How does that feel with our schedule, you know, from Rumble now having to go a few extra weeks for Road to Mania? Also, can they set the precedent? Can it work with no real hiccups, no surprises? So that way, when they want to come back to the East Coast, especially if it's to the East Coast to a city that is not, you know, tropical all the time, like a Philadelphia, you know, Philadelphia in the third week of April, a little bit warmer potentially than it is the last, you know, the first week of April. So I think it's just them trying to set the precedent. Can we just move WrestleMania to be a second half of April type of event moving forward? From here on out, you know, and yes, I know you can go to different cities like Minneapolis or what have you that have domes, but it's not just about the Mania event itself. It's about people being able to get around, being comfortable to do other events because WWE has a ton of things going on. So, you know, weather still is important, even if the Mania venue is enclosed. So I think this is going to be a huge trial and probably minimal error for them because Vegas, as well as it went off with the Super Bowl this past year, from all that I heard, people in WWE pulling after next year to have Vegas residency for Super Bowl, quite frankly, the way that this is probably going to go off. And Jack, if you go, it's probably going to be your most expensive WrestleMania ever up to this point.
They always are. Everyone I've done seems to be more expensive. But
and real quick to piggyback off of what Justin just said, yes, it is tough. And if you're in somewhere like Minneapolis where it might be cooler to get around for fans, but there's also a lot of other stuff outside of WrestleMania that piggyback off of that, other events like WrestleCons and that sort of thing. So there's a lot to take in. And like you said, Justin, it'd be tough for everybody to get around. Maybe if it's a little cooler, maybe less likely for people to want to, you know, be outdoors to get around. But in Vegas, so I'm sure the weather will be nice and be a perfect spot for everybody to kind of take it all in.
Well, it's a dry heat in Vegas, so it's fine. I think that city is going to be so cool because you're right, Jimmy. I think with all the other shows that are going to be happening there, but all the different places they can do the different shows, and it's that city's built for having a bunch of stuff happening all at once that people can go and do. And again, when you see how it takes over something like a Philadelphia or a place like LA, I can only imagine how it's going to look when WWE WrestleMania is in Vegas, and the Sphere will probably have a bunch of WWE stuff flashing up on it and things everywhere. It's going to be super cool. I'm super pumped for it. I'll find a way to get there somehow. I always say, you know, maybe not next year. Then I'm like, I'm going to go next year.
I still hold Vegas as a special place for me because we had a day off one day and John D'Amico, one of the production guys, a good friend of mine, he scored some tickets to George Carlin. And yeah, we got to see him live. And that really was
nice,
you know, special memories.
We have some contract news, and this time it's about Kevin Owens. Apparently he says that his contract is set to expire in early 2025, went on to also say he has no intention of leaving and that there's a lot of folks that, are important to him, not just the ones we see in front of the camera, but on the other side as well. So Justin, this sounds like Kevin Owens probably not going anywhere. Are we in for another 9 months of speculation before we get that he's news that he's staying, like we got with Drew McIntyre?
Yeah, I mean, that's we're not gonna be able to escape that. You know, guys like, you know, the guy, especially like a Kevin Owens, this is interesting because now again, Kevin Owens was a guy who was signed after having a lengthy run in Ring of Honor and on the independent scene. You know, he was signed to the company and brought to NXT. He under the Triple H NXT regime. So now with Triple H being in control of everything creatively, it'll be interesting to see how the quote unquote Triple H guys, how they're treated and handled as they start to move into the final years of their career. I don't have Kevin's age in front of me, but you know, I would imagine if he signs a new contract with them, that would be like his last probably talent contract. Like whatever he signs for would be his last X amount of years to be a regular full-time member of the roster. And then who knows what happens after that in terms of, you know, legend, performance center, trainer. I don't know what his goals are, but it'll be interesting to see how he's handled. Cause I mean, like we're seeing Drew McIntyre resigned, and I believe, you know, the belief is Seth Rollins is resigned and Becky, you know, so we're seeing, you know, big players sign for, again, for multiple years, but obviously, you know, you can only have so many of them as you then are trying to, you know, usher in the next era of talent. So I'll just be curious to see how, if anything looks different than how it's been in past years with talent and contracts under the previous regime. So, but yeah, I mean, Kevin, it's amazing. It's been a decade. I feel like we could all just remember yesterday when he was answering John Cena's open challenge and putting himself on the map on the main roster almost immediately.
Yeah, Kevin Owens, one of those guys that makes me feel old when I start realizing how old he is, because I still think of him as like one of the new guys. But Jimmy Tuckgraff, interesting comment here, says, I don't expect much controversy with KO. He's Canadian. How do you feel about that statement?
What kind of controversy do Canadians cause?
He says
he doesn't expect much controversy. So he's saying you guys are peaceful people.
Oh, for the most part, until you get under somebody's skin a little bit too much. But I can see Kevin Owens. Go ahead, Jess. What?
Well, I was just gonna say until their hockey team loses in Game 7, you know, haven't won anything in over 50 years when there's only six teams in the league. You know.
Oh my goodness! But you had to bring that up. Now I was having a good time talking about earlier that. Yeah, have to throw the jab. Here's the worst part. You talk about false finishes. If I'm gonna get off wrestling for a minute. What a false finish that was in Game 7 of the Leaf game against the Bruins, where the Leafs scored late in the game, made it 1-0 in a scoreless game, and everybody went, oh, is this a year that it's finally going to happen? There's the rug pulled out.
That's the best torture, y'all.
Yeah, overhaul coming. Anyways, what's surprising to me is I just had to Google it, the old Google machine. Kevin Owens is 39. So it's not really that. He's got some time left, depending on how his body holds out, because he has put his body through a lot of stuff, as we saw on Saturday too, in that street fight with Solo and Tama Tonga. So the other thing I find interesting is the way he's saying that he's not going anywhere, I think is a big symbol on how the culture is in WWE right now, especially the backstage culture and how Triple H has created a different atmosphere, has changed that backstage setting where people want to be there. Whereas before, people felt kind of on edge being back there, wondering, is this the day where somebody's going to call me, where I get that magic phone call? I'm sorry, creative has nothing for you, or something like that. But with Triple H, it looks like people are more confident in his abilities to find something that you can turn into your own and see if it makes it work. You know what I mean? I'm trying to find the right words here. But for you to develop yourself and bring the best of yourself out, and if something stumbles along the way, like we saw with Baron Corbin, you can go down to NXT, reinvent yourself, whereas before, guys had to go away. We saw Cody do it. We saw Drew McIntyre do it. Now they have their own system. Go down to NXT, work with the young talent down there. You can help them out as well as helping yourself out. So I think that environment is completely changed, and Kevin Owens is happy being there right now.
Well, I'd also imagine at this point in his career, like, he knows what he's got with WWE, and he's doing pretty well. I know sometimes us wrestling fans, we are like, if you're not the world champion, you're not being used very well, or you're not being taken care of. But in the grand scheme of things, Kevin Owens is doing pretty darn good with what he gets. And so unless there's a ton of money on the table somewhere else, or unless there's something that is just really fascinating, I feel like it'd be really tough. And this isn't a shot to anybody. This is just the reality. It'd be tough to think he'd want to leave just for the sake of leaving. You know what I mean, Justin?
Oh, yeah. I mean, AEW is the only other place in North America that could afford to pay him what he's making now or more. But you know, I mean, what would he want to do? Like, unless he feels like, I got a whole bunch of more matches in me and I see potential over there and I'm not going to get it here. I think, kind of like what Jimmy's saying, there seems to be a level of stability and calm that's happening right now internally in WWE, you know, for the better. And so if that remains, and if he can negotiate, hey, look, you know, because I know we've seen pictures of his son looks like he's becoming a teenager. Like, if he can negotiate, hey, I want to be off the road a little bit more, but I still want to be a player, I still want to be a contributor, and can work out, you know, if he can work something out, I don't see how or he could justify not being there, you know.
Yeah. Real quick also, in the chat, Tutgraph had mentioned, as far as the drama coming up, says, I was thinking about both Jimmy and Drake being Canadians. Jimmy, whose side are you on, Drake or Kendrick? I'm just curious.
Oh, gotta go with Drake.
I'm so glad you had an answer. I didn't know if you were up to date on all the hip-hop beef that's been going on over the weekend. But
Jimmy is listening to he's been listening to these diss tracks all weekend long while he's been roasting the lamb. He's
are you kidding? Yeah, man.
Let us know in the chat, are you team Drake or team Kendrick? I don't know, but just for fun. We got a contract that came to an end recently. Gable Steveson was released, Olympic gold medalist. One of the first, maybe the first, Justin, I can't remember if he was the first or one of the first NIL signings. They built him up like he was going to be a pretty big deal. Doesn't seem to have worked out, though.
I think he was the first NIL. Yeah, I mean, you know, he was heavily scouted again in the previous regime. So it seems, you know, I don't know what to make. I mean, we didn't see much of him. We saw a little bit in NXT. I just, you know, add him to the list of, you know, names that had a certain amount of hype that just for one reason or another, it just didn't get to pan out. Whether you're talking Tiger Ali Singh or Nathan Jones, or, you know, there's just names over the years that they tell you this is the next big thing. But as we see, there's only next big things, a very select few that can live up to that billing. I don't see him. I don't see him popping up in the pro wrestling space anywhere else personally, but that's just me.
No, it's, Jimmy, yeah, this is one. Now the signing was huge. They drafted him early one year in the draft. They had him come out at WrestleMania just as a, hey, look who's here. like on stage, not just like in the crowd, but like they made a pretty big deal about him. Nothing ever really happened with that. I don't really know the story of this guy. I don't know why things didn't work out, or I know his, I believe it's his brother is doing pretty well in NXT right now. Any thoughts on this? I guess my takeaway is never think someone's the next big thing until you see him regularly on TV.
That too. And sometimes you take people who are coming from the athletic world, not that wrestlers are not athletic, obviously they are, but yeah, you take someone who is an Olympic athlete and an Olympic wrestler and try to transition him into pro wrestling, doesn't always work. You have exceptions. You have great exceptions. Chad Gable is the current one. We talk about Kurt Angle all the time, you know, winning an Olympic medal with a broken freaking neck and the whole bit, but transitioning into wrestling and finally getting it. Sometimes they just don't grasp the concept of pro wrestling and it's not for them. So they have to continue in some other field because it doesn't work for them. And maybe that's what they were seeing. They were hoping because, you know, obviously he was a guy that looked the part.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can't be the part, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And yeah, in the chat, Goodfellow says Damon Kemp, who's, again, I believe it's his brother, seems like he has the chops to do it. They're related somehow. I can't remember exactly how, but I think brothers. I'm a fan of Damon Kemp. I think he's doing pretty good stuff in NXT.
I also think that when you know, you're looking at, especially when you're particularly recruiting from the high level wrestling, amateur wrestling ranks and Olympic ranks, like, you know, if you're looking at them and you're measuring them to be, they could be the next Kurt Angle, they could be the next Brock Lesnar, you know, it's just, I mean, we're talking about one of a kind generational talents and with Brock and Kurt specifically. And then, you know, and then there's others that have done well. Big E did well in amateur wrestling, Dolph Ziggler, you know, obviously Shelton Benjamin, Chad Gable. I mean, there's another level, but it's like, I don't know. I just think Mark, obviously Mark Henry, Mark for his, not for wrestling, but for his Olympic strongman. WWE's been blessed to have a few generational athletes come from that world. And I think that you have to be careful on how many more you're going to find, you know, from that with whatever expectation you're putting on them.
Justin, I have a question. I don't know if we have an answer for this, but I know when he first signed WWE, there were some questions about whether or not he was going to do UFC or WWE with his background. Now that they're under one company, like, is it possible they could release him so he could sign with UFC? Or is that because they're one company, could they just say, okay, this is your contract? Like, how does that even work?
Well, no, to the best of my understanding, obviously it's all very new still, but to the best of my understanding, while it's all one umbrella, you're still totally separate talent contracts. So yeah, like he could be released from being a WWE talent and it would be a whole separate contract and dealing and money and everything to be a UFC fighter. And I'm not saying you're wrong, Jack. I just don't remember there being much of a debate about necessarily WWE or UFC. I remember there being debate. The debates I remember seeing is like, is he going to remain in school? Is he going to remain to be applicable just to continue going for NCAA gold? How does his eligibility with that and WWE affect his eligibility for the Olympics? Like, I remember seeing hearing a lot of that debate. I don't know if UFC's in there. I'm not sure how far along or how serious that ever would have been.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, is like Olympic stuff as opposed to UFC stuff. I just know there was some like, will he do this or will he do something else?
Yeah, I know his eligibility, whether he was going to stay to do a senior year in college at one point was a thing. And then like, I think WWE like set up WWE rings up in Minnesota for him so he could like train on his downtime and whatever.
Tut Graf, a great comment here though, says there wasn't a Brock before Brock. Don't expect one after him. I think it's a great way to look at it. Cause a lot of people say the next Brock, but you're right. There wasn't a Brock before Brock. So
that's like saying, and no offense to my buddy, Paul White, that when Big Show was around, you know, here's the next Andre the Giant. There was only one Andre the Giant. There'll never be another.
Right. And he's from France, which I got embarrassed about by Matt on Friday.
That was the brightest spot of my day when I discovered that clip on Twitter. Because I didn't see the show live. And when I'm watching that, I'm like, oh my God, please tell me Jack kicks out and it comes to his senses for this.
I wasn't really paying attention to Matt. I was trying to think of the tag team. And I was thinking Renee Paquette. No, that's the inner. And then he's giving me all these, like, the very obvious answer with, like, lights and everything. And I'm just like, oh, I don't know. Who's this? Oh, wow.
I mean, it's fair. You know him as Andre the Giant. You don't know him as Andre Rusimov or whatever.
Still, no, I should have. That should have been the first one that came to mind. But
the only reason I got to learn his last name was anytime I got sent to the airport to pick him up from his hotel room, they had to tell me his last name so I'd call up to his room. Because can I have Andre the Giant's room? Who are you? You know, obviously they're not going to give you that information. So,
well, I want to thank everyone for joining us here tonight in the chat. We got a bunch of people: Jonathan Torres, Ethan Cruz, Chad W, Majestic Marie, Rick Platt. We got Reaper and Armando and Baby and Daniel and Adonde and Angie and Jay Willie. And we got Montez, who is back. Good to see you again. Mike Martin stalking you. Joe C, King of the Lurkers. So many other folks here. I can't get through you all. I apologize. Otherwise, it'd just be me reading names the entire time. So I got to move on. But thank you guys so much for joining us. Please like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star review, all that good stuff. We got a I will call it the Bray Wyatt QR code today. And I didn't get a chance to pull it up, but there has been so much speculation on this new Bray Wyatt themed faction. People are speculating Bo Dallas, Nikki Cross, Dexter Lumis, Joe Gacy, Eric Rowan. They're expecting 6 people for the Wyatt 6. So many other people and things could be happening here. Jimmy, I want to go to you first. Thoughts on this, who you think could be in it, where you think this could be going. Just any kind of takeaways on this group, because that seems to be what a lot of people are talking about these days.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And a lot of the names being thrown out there are very possible participants in this this group, if there is a 6-member group here. And one name that I find interesting that's not on there that I'm kind of curious that I would like to possibly see on there because of his work at NXT returning is a Sean Spears. I like that kind of dark character that he's developed down there. And I'd like maybe he would be a perfect fit for this. I don't know. I kind of have to see it. But again, moving forward, it's going to be interesting to see where they go with this, because obviously it's going to be tricky, I think, to pay the proper respect and homage to the Bray Wyatt character in the same vein. You don't want to, and hopefully, like we've said before, just please don't call it the Uncle Howdy character, whatever. Find a name that suits it a lot better.
Blue Chew thinks R-Truth should be in the group, but
no, he's too funny.
Justin, I look at this and this all sounds great on paper, but I always worry when us fans start to book ourselves into a corner where we're expecting something that was never promised. And a lot of these names, sure, it looks like they can work together, but there's been nothing that makes me think Nikki Cross is a part of this group or Dexter Lumis is a part of this group. Do you think that maybe us fans are getting ahead of ourselves here?
We could be. I think the bottom line is we know something is coming. Right. I think at the very least, we know Bo Dallas as Uncle Howdy or some character is coming. And I feel pretty good to say that Eric Rowan probably too. At the very least, something's coming. Whether we get a whole full 6-person faction, we'll see. Mm-hmm. This is a creative tightrope to walk because you're paying respect to an unbelievable talent who was lost suddenly and way too young. So naturally, the crowd is going to give a little extra leeway. That's going to give a little extra time if it needs to be. If it isn't bat 1,000 right out the gate, there'll be a little bit of patience out of respect from the fans. I believe that. But it's like, at what point is like, do you judge and say, okay, this is a hit, this is working? And at what point do you have to like say, all right, this is not working? And like, you don't want to be faced with this, okay, it's not working, we need to pivot or you know, audible. But we don't want it to come off as like disrespectful to Bray's legacy that we're giving up on this. Like, that's a real thing. The other real component to this... The wrestling world has lost a lot of wrestlers, unfortunately, from different generations, unfortunately. The wrestling world, WWE specifically, hasn't lost a ton of wrestlers who were currently active on the roster when they passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Owen Hart passed away tragically, and you know, Brett and the Hart Foundation, the remaining Hart Foundation, they were already out of the company or in WCW. So there was nothing internally to be done in terms of like, oh, we're gonna like, when Eddie Guerrero passed, it was okay. Ray got to immediately pick up the tribute, but guess what? Rey Mysterio was already going to be a lifelong babyface anyways. Still is.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Benoit passed away. Obviously, we know the controversy that comes within 48 hours of that, so we're erasing him. What I'm saying is this is not very familiar waters to have a talent actively on the roster suddenly be lost, and then you're trying to pay respect to them, but you're trying to pick up and carry on. Now, there is still the writer that was featured in the Peacock piece, the Peacock documentary. There's still that writer that is there in the company that was working with Bray. He's still with the company, as best I understand. Jason Baker, Tom Savini, the entire guys here in Pittsburgh who do the Funhouse stuff, who did all the masks, all the whatever, they're still around. So you still have these creative forces who help with Bray, who can be part of this and can contribute to this project. So that's encouraging. But again, the man, William Rotundo, was one of a kind. And it is a certain crazy expectation to ask Bo Dallas or whomever the talent are, and then the other writers and special effects people, it's a crazy task to ask them carry on, pay respect to Bray, and make it as good as people want in their head. All the people involved can put their best effort forth, and it could still be quality, but I'm not sure what the audience's bar of expectations is going to be. And that this is just such an unknown situation. Let it be known, though, I am very excited for this. I want it to work because I argued with Raj many years. I like a little magic in my pro wrestling. I know Raj doesn't like as much magic as smoke and mirrors. I like the magic and smoke and mirrors. So I'm excited to see this happen. I'm excited to see what they do. I really want it to work, but it is a very unique situation to try to creatively produce.
I think you hit the nail on the head in every way, because
one more thing really. So this group, I assume this group, when they or whoever it is, again, group, or if it's just Uncle Howdy, or if it's Uncle Howdy and Eric, whatever, whoever on this, we'll just call it the Bray Wyatt tribute project, we'll just call that, mm-hmm. whoever on this project reappears, I assume they are going to be on the baby face side of things, meaning their first opponents is going to be a heel, because you're not going to ask the crowd to boo this, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, but what does that mean then long term? Are you creatively forever locked into having to have it be people or groups that only go against heels, because you know, is the crowd ever going to be okay, feel okay booing this? Can this group ever make a heel turn? Or would that feel weird that you're booing a group in a tribute to Bray, like, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
just things like that. Like, where are your creative limitations?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, hypothetical, because he's lived on, he's got a great career, and he's great retirement now. If, God forbid, something would have happened in the late 90s to the man Mark Calloway, and he mm-hmm. no longer, and so the Undertaker was no longer a character that WWE could do anymore, you assume the character Kane would carry on whatever tribute and legacy. Does that mean Kane could never be a heel again? Does that mean Kane could never set a person on fire again? Because it would be like, you know, it's just a weird situation. And I hope that they can pull it off with the best of intentions and best of production and results.
I think if you take the personal side out of it, cause it's obviously a very personal like story, I would say every group needs a reason why they're a group. And like what they're doing, if it's so, they need to have something, and it can't just be to pay tribute to Bray Wyatt. Because right. again, if you're a good guys, there's six of you, you're going to outnumber everybody. That's a very weird situation if it's 6-on-1 against a bad guy. So if it's against another group of other bad guys, why are you? I have to figure out why you're in pro wrestling, if that makes sense. You know?
They can only battle the Final Testament, Judgment Day. They can only battle right. them for so long.
Right.
And right. one of the bloodlines. And one of the bloodlines.
Right. So like that's right. I think even just booking wise, that's a very weird way to have to approach things too. Cause I feel like Final Testament falls in that a lot, where I'm like, why are you a group? Like, why are you together? even though I like the people, it's just like, I don't get why you're a group. I think Wyatt Six, if that's what we're going to call them, Bray Wyatt group here, I need to know why they're a group. If it's just a, because we remember Bray Wyatt, that's kind of a weird thing. Yeah. And like, and then at one point, if they ever lose, I'm going to be like, how could you have the guys who are trying to pay tribute lose? That, I don't know. It's a weird.
Well, and also, if it is some of these names that are rumored again, Bo Dallas is the automatic that makes sense. If again, assuming he's under a mask, he's a Howdy or something. Rowan, he's been gone for a while, so he's back. That's fine because he's an original Wyatt family member. But like, you know, Nikki Cross, you know, what was Nikki's win-loss record? And what like, how great did she look the last time that she was on TV regularly? Dexter Lumis, you know, his thing just kind of fell off after he did the stuff with The Miz and whatever. Like, and he, like, that's a lot of projects to reinvent. That's a lot of, you know, I mean, so I almost would rather it as, let's just have Bo Dallas as whomever, and maybe Eric Rowan be around. Get some months and mileage out of that. And then
keep the circle tight.
And then later, Dexter Lumis pops up, and like, he's got to focus for a few months again under this Bray Wyatt universe, if we want to call it. And then, okay, when the time comes when we need a new female character in the mix, Nikki, like, let it be a universe. Almost like let the six or family, whatever you want to call it, but it doesn't all have to be at one. Because you're right, Jack. If you have six of them at one time, but we know that this is gonna have to probably be a babyface group to start, how the hell are you gonna, you know? So I don't necessarily think we have to roll out all these characters at once, if that's even any truth to it, if six people are even in the running here.
Well, speaking of six people, we got Judgment Day to show. Damian Priest apologizes for losing his cool after his match with Jey Uso, and then Finn Balor's next King of the Ring. Finn thinks he's going to get a first round bye, but Adam Pearce says he's actually facing Jey Uso. Jey Uso comes out. We get our first match in the King of the Ring. It goes pretty well until eventually Drew McIntyre comes out. Jey uses this to get a pin and get the win before he gets a Scottish stare down by Drew McIntyre. Jimmy, thoughts on how this started, how they kind of just brushed everything under the rug with Judgment Day being unhappy with each other, and also getting Jey Uso in this spot to get the win when Drew McIntyre was hurt?
Well, it all kind of fits. It all kinds of makes sense because there is a connection there with everything. As far as the way it was presented, obviously Adam Pearce came out on social media and announced that Drew would be out, but didn't announce his replacement just yet. I think the news broke just before Raw went on the air who the replacement was going to be, spoiler alert. But they went ahead and did it as if no one knew, but that's fine. It worked out well. The crowd went crazy, or as Pat Patterson would say, the crowd went banana. And this Yeet thing is getting over. It wasn't quite like what we saw on Saturday in Lyon, France, but he's an organic babyface. It is working with him right now. And this is something where you can... Obviously, he lost his opportunity against Damian Priest on Saturday, but to get that momentum back and have him have a big win in this tournament going into King of the Ring and make him a legitimate threat as someone who could possibly become King of the Ring or Yeet of the Ring. King Yeet? Does that work or something like that? No. And the Drew McIntyre stuff, he didn't have to say anything. His face spoke a million words the way he came out, and he gave him that Scottish stare down afterwards. Everything is working. I like the way it turned out. The opening segment, the opening match was really good.
And Jay Harris asks, how did they brush it under the rug when they addressed it? I guess, like, they squashed it. They didn't.
You think they have.
Right. Well, that's what I meant. Like, the scenario was we're sweeping it under the rug.
What I got from Saturday and tonight with Priest and Judgment Day is that WWE Creative finally might have a date circled on the calendar of when they plan to have the true Judgment Day implosion. I do think we are starting to get the early teases that when Judgment Day breaks, that Priest is going to go off and Priest is going to be on the babyface side of things. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I'm feeling. It makes sense that they wait to then have Drew McIntyre be not medically clear. They wait until after Backlash to say that and then have Jey be inserted, because obviously it would make no sense to...
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Prior to Backlash, prior to Jay's title match, to insert Jay into the King of the Ring, because it's like, well, what happens if he wins the title? You don't want to take away that that mystery. That being said, Jay Uso's over, super over, like Rover. I get it, so I understand. And he was kind of like screwed out of beating Priest because they had to deal with Finn, he had to deal with JD. So I guess that's the justification is, okay, he gets a match against Finn here in the tournament because he kind of got screwed out of his title match. But it is a little weird to me in a way that like, he loses in his world title match, and 2 days later, he gets to be put in the tournament. When you do then highlight later on the show, Bron Breakker asking, hey, why not me? Bronson Reed, why not me? So I do take a little bit of umbrage with that logic.
Yeah, I agree with that. But what I do like about it is it does tell that great story of everyone who Drew McIntyre hates, and he really hates Jey Uso as well, seems to be getting all the stuff that he wants. So. Yeah. I let it slide, but you do make a good point that why did the guy who just lost get a shot at the King of the Ring?
And your justification trumps my complaint. It's the story's the bigger picture. Right. What's gonna aggravate Drew even more?
What about me?
Right. So and that's what it is, and I get it. But I felt it'd be fair because I would have called AEW out on the same thing. So I felt it'd be fair to just to say from a win-loss standpoint, that's a little crooked, right?
Mike, you said you're hearing a clicking. How do you know which one of us is clicking?
I'm clicking.
Very curious.
My hands are empty, Mike.
I mean, I don't. I'm not clicking. I'm not clicking either. But I'm just curious because you always said Jimmy. I'm just curious why you always thought it was Jimmy in the past. Because on your end, it's coming through the speakers. So how can you tell? But
I'm not hearing it.
We move on to
hand check.
We also have.
Hold on, let me check. Audrey, are you clicking a pin? No. She hasn't got a pen either. Not even the remote. She's not even.
I'm gonna start clicking a pin just to mess with Mike.
Hey, Mike, I don't know what you're talking about, man.
So Ricochet and Ilya Dragunov also had a matchup in the King of the Ring. They both have promos beforehand. It's a this is awesome level matchup. Dragunov gets busted open, still gets the big win, and he's going to go to round two to face Jey Uso. Jimmy, this was a good look at Ilya Dragunov on the main roster. What did you think about this one?
I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was a really good match for Ilya Dragunov to get his big win on a big platform coming off that pay-per-view Sunday. You know, the audience was hopefully going to be bigger on TV, get more eyes on him and get him more familiar with a bigger audience. And I thought they did a great job of doing that. Ricochet was somebody I thought was on his way up. Hopefully this isn't a setback for him, and it's just like a little stop sign before he goes forward. But I'm afraid him trying to get his momentum back. I mean, he looked really good in the match, and he's starting to get it. Like, he's a high flyer. He does a lot of those great, great moves that a lot of other guys can't do, but he was placing them properly. I'll give you an example really quick. When Ilya was on the outside, he did the dive through the ropes the first time. Dragunov didn't go down. And then he walked around the ring. He did it the other side. And again, he propped himself up on the barricades this time to keep himself from going down. And then when he worked his way over to the ramp side, that's when Ricochet did the flip swanton over the top rope to land on him. He built to that moment as opposed to before, you know, instead of doing all this crazy stuff, he's learned to put pieces in place and stuff that makes gets the crowd amped up with every one that he does. So little things like that. And of course, Dragunov looked really good. The finish looked really awesome. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And hopefully not too many people kick out of it going forward and establish that as this is one you can't kick out of. So,
yeah, Justin, this was, I think, a lot of people's first real look at Ilya Dragunov, at least at a match with stakes on the main roster. How do you think he did? I mean, obviously, we know Ricochet. Dragunov's kind of the new guy. He is the new guy. And a lot of people have said he might be the guy to win King of the Ring. Do you think that he did well?
I do. I like the video package they gave just before the match to introduce him to people who aren't familiar with him. I thought this was a great, you know. Yeah, Ricochet's been trending up, you know, but look, if the match goes beyond 3 minutes, it's out of Ricochet's wheelhouse here. He's the speed champion, 3 minutes or under. But no, it was a good match. Jimmy made a great point of Ricochet, you know, the way he kind of built to his with his high-flying arsenal. That finish of the tight shot of Dragunov in the corner, revving up, he's got blood dripping down from his forehead to his nose, and then delivers that flying forearm shot right into the side of Ricochet's jaw. That's a good look. That's a great visual. I agree with Jimmy. Let's not have anybody kicking out of that anytime soon. For those of you that are regulars to my Sunday Busted Open, spoiler alert, this might be a candidate. Might be a nomination in our match of the week. unless Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision just absolutely goes bonkers and can bump this from the list. Spoiler alert there.
Follow that.
Yeah, I loved it. I was very concerned about Dragunov on the main roster because he has a style that you never really sure. Similar to when Gunther came up, like, is he going to be able to do the things he does on the main roster? He clearly can, and I thought it worked great. So Tutgraph says, I got to remember to catch Justin's show. Yes, you do. It's you can't miss.
9 a.m. To noon every Sunday. You can listen to it live, listen to it on the SiriusXM app, or there's a 40-minute condensed version of a podcast version.
Sit back on a Sunday, sip your coffee. It's fun.
And then we have CM Punk shows up, and he comes out, and he says that he's upset with Jay, and Drew said he was upset with Jay before he left, but then he misses CM Punk. CM Punk comes out and he says he's going to sit in the ring and wait until Drew comes back as long as it takes. Jimmy, And he didn't wait as long as it takes because Drew never came back and CM Punk left. He told me to tell him when he's telling lies. CM Punk told lies. He didn't wait until Drew got back.
Well, I will give him credit, though, for the Camaro Z28 or Z28, however you pronounce it. Big time fan of the car. And yeah, you know, he's good at revving up the crowd. He's one of the best talkers, and he was able to go out there for a few minutes and really, really put some emphasis on this rivalry coming up. And of course, shooting some daggers and some jabs at Drew in the process. And it was a good way to get both guys some exposure without them having to get physical, because we saw it at WrestleMania a little bit. We've seen a little bit of physicality with Punk. He seems to look good. I don't know how much he can do right now, you know, because the timeline originally I thought was a lot longer for him to get ready. So maybe, who knows, maybe a Clash of the Castle, he will be ready. And depending on Drew's injury and how long that takes, maybe we get it sooner than we anticipated.
Justin Adonde mentions, I love how they both had their own style cars. I love that as well. I got to ask you, though, whose car do you like more, Drew or Punk's?
No, Punk's. I'll go with the vintage.
Had the T-tops. Sorry. Had the T-top roofs, too. I love that.
So there was a really good and a really, I don't say really bad. That sounds like super negative, but there was pros and cons. The big pro here, I love the Drew getting in the car, speeding off, and then just as he's just about up the ramp, here comes Punk pulling in. That was hilarious. Awesome move. Love the single shot Scorsese, follow Punk all the way to the ring. Did you catch Jimmy, by the way? He hollered off screen, off camera to Jackie Redmond.
Yeah.
Who's a Toronto Maple Leaf.
Yeah. Sorry about your Maple Leafs.
Love that. And I love the fact that basically Punk ended his promo with basically, to me in wrestling speak, basically confirming that he and Drew is going to take place at Clash of the Castle in Scotland, Drew's home country. So Drew is going to be the over mega baby face that night. And Punk is just going to revel in being the heel. He's gonna love it. I am so looking forward to that event. That's exciting. But the con that I have is I disagree, and Jack, I think you're kind of you did allude to it with the lie comment. I don't think that was a good play. Having Punk out there and he's doing the whole shtick and he's talking to McAfee, talking to the audience, everybody take a picture, tweet it to Drew, let's make him angry that he's at a stop, let's make him turn around. He's doing all this. And his promo, for a guy who can be a little more succinct in his promo if he needs to be, his promo was kind of dragging. I'm like, okay, well, it's dragging because he's waiting for them to hit Drew's music. I thought for sure they're going to hit Drew's music, or we're going to go to the back and we're going to see Drew, you know, his car peeling and burning rubber to get in the parking lot to get out and to come chase Punk down and, you know, Pierce and security's going to something. Somehow they're going to stop him from getting to Punk. I thought for sure that's what we're waiting on, is Drew's music or Drew's car to come back in, and we never got that. That seemed weird to me to build a lot of that promo around. We're going to stand out here and hijack the show until Drew McIntyre comes back. Because look, in the past we've shown Drew is not like Drew wants to get his hands on Punk.
Right.
Last week it was Punk outsmarted and Punk was up the skybox, and then Drew makes his way to the skybox, and then Punk is down in the ring. So Drew wants to pursue Punk. So why, if the entire WWE universe just tweeted at Drew, why would Drew not have turned around? Or at the very least, Punk ends his promo. At the very least, we go to commercial, come back, and then we see Drew peeling back in. Where is he? Where he appears? Oh, he already left. You just missed him. Sorry, bud. Like, the fact that we didn't see Drew at all again, that's weird. So yeah. I took a problem with that.
Question for both of you. Would you have been okay with this, all things considered? Punk said he was going to stay there until Drew showed up because he wanted to bash him in the face and that sort of thing. And finally, Punk comes to the realization, well, this is taking far too long. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let the rest of the show continue. I'm going to sit right there at ringside, right beside Michael Cole and wait for him to show up. And then you can do what he does very well, as and he said in his promo, I could do, I'm the five, what do you say, five tool guy?
Five tool player,
yeah. So do one of the tools, go sit there on commentary and you know, knock it out of the park there. And you have him in a role. And whether you get Drew coming back or not, speeding through the parking lot, whatever the case may be, at least you get something out of it, where it's kind of not like a lie, but it's kind of, you know where
I'm at. So Jimmy, so real quick, off, I agree with that. So here's where my fantasy booking went after Punk ended this promo and we didn't see Drew. My thought was something similar. But rather than having Punk come sit near commentary or even front row, because then he's like kind of a distraction to the crowd for the rest of the show, because like the entire crowd is just going to be wanting to like. So I thought, have Punk, he gets out of the ring, we go to commercial, show him a segment or two later, sitting back up in the skybox, just like he was last week. He's got a skybox, he's sitting there, he's eating popcorn, drinking Pepsi, watching the show. And then he can, you know, turn the lights off, he get back to the show, but you know he's up there.
Right.
And then I thought to myself, what a great way to end the show. What a great way to end Raw. Drew comes back. He's looking for Punk. And I knew the last match was going to be Gunther and Sheamus. Mm-hmm. Well, what triple threat have we seen in the past? Gunther, Sheamus, Drew. I thought it would be very easy for one of them to have just cut Drew off. You know, Sheamus just loses to Gunther. Sheamus is pissed. He's coming to his senses. Here's Drew's music. Where's Punk? Where is he? And Sheamus just lays Drew out. He's like, get the like, that's where I thought we were going. So I was just so stunned that we didn't get Drew to come back at all.
Right. Well, you mentioned being backstage. I feel like you see those beautiful cars. One of my favorite WWE things to do is have them destroy a car. I mean, it'd be great if Drew McIntyre came back and busted up that beautiful car of Punk's. I don't want to see it get busted up, but nothing, I mean, that what a jerky move to destroy a beautiful car.
Or have Punk go out in the parking lot where his beautiful Z28 is parked with one of the T-tops off, maybe eating some popcorn, just waiting there to see if he shows up, and just go to that shot every once in a while.
Yeah.
Something. And for anybody who's never been in the back of that Hartford XL Arena, that ramp that Drew drove up, that's a tight one. So he did a good job navigating that car through there.
A beautiful car too.
WrestleMania 11, Bam Bam and LC.
We're getting kind of late in the show, but I have to pick a fight with you, Jimmy, because Adonde makes a good point here. Asks, what did you guys think about the Jack Perry jab, the choke artist line? Now, Jimmy, you have been very critical about any time AEW does something that references CM Punk. Are you critical of CM Punk referencing the Jack Perry situation?
Well, they have a history, but okay, he made the jab. If you take it that way, he didn't specify who he was talking about, did he?
Oh,
did he say it?
No, he asked. Matt McAfee did.
Well, okay.
He didn't say the name. He said the front chokehold.
There's a difference between
guillotine. Taking, that's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, but he could take that jab because he had him in a rear choke, and like we said, Samoa Joe picked the kid up like he was a schoolboy and escorted him away, Jack Perry. But I don't have as much of a problem with that. It's different when you call somebody the Harvey Weinstein of pro wrestling. That's where I got to draw a line.
When he said that line, when he goes, "Oh, Pat McAfee, I'm the in Paco's guillotine," my mind first went to, okay, Punk's fault UFC. Did he have like a big guillotine moment? And then for a second, I go, no. Okay. Then I realize, oh, is this a little sly at the. So what I'm saying is Punk was kind of clever because it wasn't as an obvious of a. If it was a shot at Jack Perry, it wasn't as obvious immediately. Mm-hmm. My mind, and I've been talking about him and Jack Perry for weeks between this show and Busted Open. My mind for a second had to make sure I had to check a box. Is this a UFC comment? No, okay, this is the...
It could have been interpreted differently depending on who's heard it, but for hardcore wrestling fans, that's the way they saw it right away. It's kind of like that grind comment, you know? I won't get too much into, but...
That's just a great way to phrase it. Manish saying I'm on the AEW payroll. No, we argue about it every Wednesday. So I had to bring it up.
Jimmy with the Greek grind.
The Greek grind. And yeah, there was a lot of it yesterday.
Whoa. What are you saying?
No, we're talking about the food. We're talking about the food.
Oh, I think that's what you're talking about.
Hey, kayfabe, brother.
In any case.
So, Jack, wait a minute. So you're getting checks from Jacksonville. I'm getting them from Stanford. Where are you getting your checks from, Justin?
Oh, I ride both sides of the fence. I go both ways.
Oh, you're cashing two checks. I love it.
I'm hardcore, brother.
There you go.
Look, I'll take checks from whoever wants to send them. I'm mm-hmm. for sale. Just send me the money.
Must be the money.
Gunther and Sheamus, they have a matchup in our main event. Goes back and forth. Kaiser eventually gets a shot on Sheamus's knee before he gets ejected. Match continues for some time before Gunther uses the half crab to make Sheamus tap out. And Gunther moves forward in King of the Ring. Justin, I love this matchup. I just wish they would have hit each other a little harder. What about you?
Oh, these soft sissy Marys.
Sissy Marys.
I'm going to text Sheamus right now and say, where are your balls at, fella? Now, this is, I mean, good God. I mean, this is exactly what I expected. It was a great match. It was a great main event. I immediately assume Gunther is going deep on his side of the bracket. I know we don't know even the other side of the bracket. I mean, but this was a lot of fun. This is a great, you know, I would say this, I don't expect this Raw to do great numbers. If anything, I expect maybe it to do the same as last week, maybe even a little bit less. And I say that only because you're doing two tournaments simultaneously, a men's tournament and a women's tournament. That's a lot of wrestling, and sometimes stories can get lost, characters can get lost, even though they try to debut some new characters on Raw. But that's a lot more in-ring action. It's a lot more advertised in-ring action, and they slash two matches and move them to live events. It's a lot more than Raw would normally do. And I wouldn't be surprised if they see a little down in numbers, because that's a harder thing to keep people's attention with all these matches. That said, they're committed to this tournament. They picked a hell of a match for the main event with these two, no doubt.
Yeah, Jimmy, this was, all jokes aside, these guys beat the tar out of each other. This was everything that I think we wanted it to be. Gunther gets the win. I don't think that was the most shocking thing, but I do think it's pretty shocking that Sheamus actually tapped out as opposed to some other type of, you know, passing out or something. But Sheamus tapped, which is no small feat. That's a big deal.
No, it's no small feat. Exactly. And that's what people weren't expecting. You don't expect the babyface to tap. We've seen it 2 weeks in a row now. We've seen Xavier Woods tap, and now we've seen Sheamus tap, but there was something that preceded it. We had the Ludwig coming out and interfering and causing the knee injury to Sheamus, and Sheamus did a great job of selling that knee throughout the match after that spot happened, and that was the story that they told. And it made perfect sense for him to tap out, especially after being in that hold for so long and doing that much damage to the knee. I was perfectly fine with it because it made sense. Yes, your heroes are supposed to be almost like Superman, but even Superman has a kryptonite. And eventually he comes to a point where even Superman has to tap. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But eventually he'll come back. And there were times in the match where you thought, oh, you know what? Maybe this can go the other way. At least you had a little bit of a doubt. But I think people pretty much knew that Gunther is the guy going forward in WWE's eyes. And again, the little things that matter. What a slobber knocker, as JR used to say. My goodness. And that's those welts on Sheamus's body. That's the one where you apologize to the other guy before you go to the ring.
Yeah.
Sorry, dude, but, you know, we're all good afterwards.
Sheamus got his in because Gunther was bleeding. Gunther was bleeding inside of his mouth. So
right.
Oh, they were... like they liked it. They're in their wheelhouse when they do that stuff.
Yeah. They beat the tar out of each other, but we have a bunch of stuff to get through. So I'm going to kind of rush through a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Io Sky versus Natalya, round one, Queen of the Ring. Io Sky gets the win. We also hear that Asuka is injured. So Dakota Kai will take her place in the King of the Ring tournament or Queen of the Ring tournament. And in that match, where did my notes go for that? Oh, she faced Ladder Valkyria. I had it all here together. She got the win over, or Ladder Valkyria got the win over her, and Ladder Valkyria moves on in that tournament. So two matches there, Jimmy. Io Sky beats Natalya, and Ladder Valkyria beats Dakota Kai. That tournament is also shaping up to be a tightly contested one.
Yeah, you can go a lot of different directions with this one. People are guessing now, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? There are a lot of good choices here. Natalya and Io Sky had a hell of a match. I thought Natalia is just unbelievable. She's so good, and she's good at making stars as well. And I guess that's going to be her role going forward, is the one that you can count on, almost like how the WWE used Dolph Ziggler before his departure. He was the guy that was going to help elevate other talent. And it looks like that's going to be Natalia's role right now. Unfortunately, one last run. I like the fact that they kind of referenced that tomorrow's going to be Owen Hart, would have been Owen Hart's birthday, or is Owen Hart's birthday. And it would have been a nice tribute to her. And maybe you could see a little change in Natalia. I wouldn't mind seeing something different, like a more edgy, more, does she turn heel? Would that be an interesting way to go, where she feels like, you know, all these young upstarts are taking advantage of me. I'm the veteran. I built this division, something along those lines, and maybe take it in that direction. But as far as the Queen of the Ring goes, a lot of good options here. I'm looking at the list here. A lot of good options.
Yeah, Justin, one of my takeaways was Lyra Valkyria, still new to the main roster, getting a Let's Go Lyra chant in the middle of her match, I think is a pretty good sign of where she's going.
No, that's a good sign. The match wasn't the tightest, but you know, it is what it is. So I'll hang on and wait for more. But that is a good sign. And to the Natty, I really thought, nothing against Io Sky, but Natty has just been, I mean, she's like the longest tenure, one of the longest tenured full-time wrestlers. And she's been there. She does all the media. She's done all the things. She's put over this girl that's come through the system. You know, when she posted on social media ahead of tonight, a picture of her father, Jim the Anvil, crowning Owen at the, it would have been the 94 King of the Ring in Baltimore. I thought for sure, okay, we're at least going to give Natty a little bit of a run here and let this, you know, let her be at least maybe the, get her deep into this. And so I am disappointed. I'm a huge fan of Natty. Maybe to Jimmy's point, maybe a heel turn, something. I just, she's in such great shape and she's a freaking heart. Like, I don't understand why we don't do a little bit more with her.
Yeah, I'd love to see her do a lot more, but I also feel like I can't imagine her being a heel. I feel like if she was a heel, I would just be like, I'd only boo her because I like her, which isn't, you know what I mean? Like, it'd be supportive.
I get
some wins.
Can you imagine some of those training vignettes in the dungeon?
Yeah.
She goes back to the dungeon, and I don't know. Just a thought, something different for her, because she, I think, has earned. Anyways.
That's a great question, Jimmy. You, as the Canadian on the panel, is the Hart family household where the dungeon is? Is it still? Because obviously, Stu and Helen have since passed. Does Brett own it? Is that house still under the Hart family name? I assume it is, right?
I would hope so. I'm not sure.
100%. Who's living there?
That's Keith.
I mean, I'm not being funny. Bruce, I'm genuinely asking. Like, is the dungeon in that house still erect?
I wonder if they're still training people. Like, I don't know if Bruce Hart's still training.
No, they're not training. I'm pretty sure they're not training anybody. But I just wonder. Like, I assume that house has been kept in the family. Right? Like,
yeah, I hope so.
Some grandkid is living there.
Somebody is.
How crazy would be if someone just bought it and like their kid uses it as like a playroom now?
it's the most popular Airbnb in Alberta.
I can.
You know, I bet they would do very well if they rented it out as an Airbnb.
Put some screens up and make the dungeon into a video game room.
Zoe Stark beat Ivy Nile as well in her match. She also goes to the second round of the Queen of the Ring tournament. Becky Lynch, she had a moment where she came out. She talked about her Kentucky Derby outfit. Talked about the new signings to Raw and how good they are. Liv comes out, says she wants her shot. Becky says, you got it. That's when Damage Control comes out as well. They go to attack the two, but Liv Morgan leaves Becky Lynch behind to fight them off on her own. Lyra Valkyria came out and made the save there. Jimmy, this is... I feel like I like the pieces of this. This feels like they could have tightened it a little bit.
Yeah, it could have been tightened a little more. The obvious reference to the Kentucky Derby thing was just to show that WWE's reach has gone beyond just wrestling fans and has reached out elsewhere. And, you know, we've seen it with the Daytona 500 and all that sort of stuff. So that was a blatant hey, look, we're still out there doing stuff with other, you know, properties and that kind of thing. But the way it was set up, you're right. It could have been tightened up a little more. Becky's interview with Michael Cole was okay, but it wasn't anything, I hate to say it, anything to write home about. Liv actually felt more like a star than Becky did when she came out.
That's a hot take.
Yeah, and then when they did the damage control coming out and they had their back-to-back, like she had her back. I thought it was done okay where she kind of looked like she was going to help Becky fend them off and then bailed on her, left her on her own. But other than that, it was there.
There are a lot of parts I liked about it, Justin, but it felt like, I get why they want to point out the Kentucky Derby thing, but that first half of that interview felt like they were killing time themselves to get, and then it felt like a bunch of stuff happened all at once. And it was kind of weirdly paced.
Liv being back to back with Becky and then bailing out on her saying, this is not my problem. That was the best thing that they did. Everything prior was real blah. The Becky interview was blah. I don't know if her and Michael Cole didn't have any rehearsal. It sounded like she had no idea what she was going to be asked. She had nothing interesting to say. He's like grilling her on her wardrobe, and she has no good things. She has no good sound bites. It was just, and then I'm not going to spend any more time. This is not good. Yeah. Not good.
Well, we got Chad Gable versus Bronson Reed. It's got basically these guys fight for a little bit before Sami Zayn comes out and fights them both again. Bronson Reed ends up laying them both out again, walks back to Adam Pearce, says, I want the title. You know what to do. Sami Zayn later says, let's make it a triple threat. Justin, speaking of, this feels like this was a very tight segment where they basically said, start the match, get the interference, make the match, bing, bang, boom.
Yeah, I mean, these are the players right now at the top of the IC title scene, so it makes sense. I expect Sami to retain it. I don't expect Sami to drop it right now. This is fine. This is all logical in terms of the kind of roundup. But they're all three of them are kind of just chasing each other right now, so this makes sense.
Jimmy, is there anything to be taken away by the fact that Bronson Reed was left standing twice in a row? He was the last guy standing both weeks.
Yeah, it's interesting because that means to me that he's not winning the IC title.
Makes sense.
Old school booking. Look strong before you go in, and then guess what?
A couple quick things happen. We'll just make note of them real quick. Judgment Day, Carlito says he has a problem. If you could help him, then he will help them. You scratch my back, I scratch yours. Awesome Truth looks to have a title versus title match against the NCAA's Dogs. Ron Breaker wants to know why he's not in King of the Ring, and Kofi Kingston cuts an incredible promo. Jimmy, any thoughts on this set of promos that happened?
Well, the Kofi Kingston one was the best one of them all, that's for sure. I like the Ron Breaker asking why he wasn't, you know, inserted into the King of the Ring tournament. That makes sense for him if he's going to be the big star. Welcome to the big brand, or whatever he said to Adam Pearce's comment to him. And speaking of Adam Pearce, how he didn't break down laughing with R-Truth in that segment with Coach Hurley, I don't know.
Well, it was a pre-tape. He probably did the previous takes, so they had to get
right. Okay, cut. Let's do it again. And Judgment, what does he call it? Gazoo-sized head? He calls JD Michael Cole.
Funko Pop.
Yeah.
The other day it was a Klingon-sized head or something like that.
I call him Lord Farquaad. If you ever watched the first Shrek movie, he looks like Lord Farquaad.
That is a good one.
This giant, like, square head on this body that doesn't add up.
And the way he was sitting on that couch, it didn't help, didn't flatter him at all. No, just accentuated the giganticism of his head.
Justin, any thoughts on these? I thought that Kofi Kingston promo, it's almost a shame. It was so good, but it felt very buried under a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, it was a lot of match tonight. It was a good promo. It's crazy. You know, you got Big E, who's obviously, we don't know if he's ever going to wrestle again. Woods is out. It's, you know, Kofi's the most, you know, got the most bumps on his counter. The longest veteran, and he's still standing. Good for him. I hope they film the match with he and Ray, and then the other, I think it's just Baszler and Vega. I hope they film at the house shows. I hope they film them and like whether they just show clips on Raw next week or they put them on to WWE's Twitter or WWE's YouTube or Peacock or something. Like, make a thing out of it. Don't let these matches just be buried of non-importance. Like, make a thing about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing much more to add to that other than that. And
well, let me ask you this. As we transition, as we wrap up the show, I want to talk a little bit about this King of the Ring and kind of get everyone's thoughts. Everyone in the chat and everyone watching, I'd love for you to put in the comments your thoughts on the King of the Ring and the Queen of the Ring. Justin, you mentioned that there's going to be some of these matches on house shows. Do you like that they're doing these on house shows? But also, we look at the people left in the men's tournament, Jey Uso, Kofi Kingston, Rey Mysterio, Dragunov, Gunther, Carmelo Hayes, LA Knight, Santos Escobar, and then some other names not yet announced. And then the women's is Zoe Stark, Shayna Baszler, Zelina Vega, Lyra Valkyria, Io Sky, and then those yet to be named as well. Thoughts on all of this? I mean, free reign, King of the Ring, Queen of the Ring. What are your thoughts?
I'm fine with them taking a few matches and putting them in the live events, especially if those matches and the live events with those participants are probably not going to be the participants that make it all the way to the finals. But it at least takes a match that has some gravity, has some stakes. Excuse me. And maybe it elevates and sells a few extra 100 tickets to that live event. Again, film it so we can at least see a few clips. But I'm fine with that, especially because I saw on social media there were some people that were mad of like, oh, wow, you cut these two matches and I got the CM Punk promo or I got this pick something else that was unrelated to the King of the Ring tournament. It's like, well, especially with the Punk promo, it's like, all right, look, Punk and Drew is probably what's going to headline and draw the gate for a PLE here in June in Scotland. So I understand if they wanted to vote 10 minutes of TV time to that versus these two King of the Ring or Queen of the Ring matches that are, you know, so I'm fine with it. Again, just don't be throwaway, film them, do something, whatever. In terms of King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring in general, we don't even know the SmackDown side of the bracket. So I'm not even gonna try to make a prediction, but I'll say this on the men's side. I absolutely think that we're going to see Gunther and Dragunov come into contact with each other. I think that's going to be the match that's going to decide who goes to the finals representing the Raw side of the bracket. I don't know who's on the SmackDown because that's why I don't know who they're going to present there. So we'll see. Tune in Friday, right? Women's side, I could see them putting Lyra Valkyrie and giving her a push here to kind of establish her up and coming. So I could see her making it to the finals on the Raw side. I don't know the SmackDown side of the bracket, but I absolutely think how could you have a Queen of the Ring right now with it not being Tiffy time? I think the fact that they did not pin her in the triple threat at Backlash, that tells you what you need to know. There's a protection to her for a reason, and she's over for a reason. She's doing her job. I think she's definitely involved in the finals for the Queen of the Ring.
Tough to argue that, Jimmy. Any thoughts you'd like to add?
No, it's tough. Like you said, it is really tough to add to that because, like you said, without knowing the SmackDown side of the brackets, you know, the interesting one that comes to mind, though, is LA Knight. Because there's another guy on the babyface side who's really, really over, and it's going to be difficult to remove him from the tournament in some form or fashion before getting to Gunther, because Gunther looks like he's primed for at least to be in the finals of that tournament, minimum. And I agree with Justin. I think it is time. It is Tiffy time.
Yeah, I think this is Tiffy. This is Tiffy time's tournament to lose. But Tiffany Stratton's, I think hers Queen of the Ring, I think, is just perfect cinema for, you know, her coming out with the royal look and just being obnoxious. And she's doing such a good job. I think that she has to be the favorite. For the men's King of the Ring, I do look at SmackDown. I think, man, you could add Randy Orton. You could add AJ Styles. You could add Kevin Owens. You got a lot of different folks there that could really shake things up. So that's way too hard to pick now who's going to win that one. But I think it's great.
Question for you, but does someone like a Randy Orton need it? I think he could, again, be in the running, but not, he doesn't need to win it. That's for sure.
But he could be a great matchup along the way.
Yes.
Though,
oh, absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
You know, so especially if him and Kevin Owens run into each other and that friendship is put to the test, that could be interesting to see. I agree with Justin too about the house show matches. I'd love to see Rey Mysterio, Kofi Kingston. I think I wish that would be on TV, but also the promos are so important. Even though we may make fun of them a little bit or say some dragged or whatever, weren't as tight as possible. The promos are the important part. It's something Rick Rubin loves pro wrestling. And he had this great quote where he said, if you watch pro wrestling, you'll notice they take their commercials during the matches because the promos are what are important. So yeah, if you have to choose, you put the promo on TV.
It'd be interesting if they do tape those matches, Justin, to see, not make it as overproduced, not make it look like TV, make it look a little grainy, make it look like almost like a someone there filming it from the audience or something along those lines.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if they film the Kofi versus Rey match, I'm not expecting Rico and Stu and all the cameramen to be there. let it be one person just filming from ringside and make it feel very like just authentic, just somebody just captured raw footage.
I want Rico and Stu to film it. I like their eye.
Those guys deserve a day off there.
No kidding. Those guys are awesome. They've been there forever because they know they're the best.
Rico is a Pittsburgh guy. When he's not doing WWE, he finds himself, he's at Pirate games and Penguin games. I'm like, he's running camera. I'm like, dude, take a day off. Take a day off. Just go.
Cruz with a great comment, by the way. Says Chelsea Green should win all her matches by luck and win it all. That could be a fun little story to unplay there.
Speaking of Stu the cameraman, it took me forever. When I first met him, I thought his name was Stewie. I didn't realize it. His first name was Thomas. it took a while.
Well, I think that does it for us. This was a good episode. I want to thank everyone who joined us. Angela, Keith, Bernie, Fernando, Tuck, Beer Money, Ethan Cruz, and Mike Martin, everyone here. Please like, comment, share, subscribe. Justin, any final thoughts for this week, and where can the world find you?
No final thoughts. King and Queen of the Ring. It's fun to bring it back, but like I said, it's a bit of an experiment in today's WWE to see how this much heavy in-ring action with just tournament stakes, without a ton of character or heat backstory is going to go. Follow me at Justin LaBar across Twitter, across Instagram. And of course, every single Friday morning, I'm on Busted Open Spar with LaBar. And then every Sunday, I got the entire 3 hours to myself and Jonathan Hood at 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. Again, listen live on channel 156 on SiriusXM. Listen whenever you want on demand via the SiriusXM app, or again, get the free podcast. We had Court Bauer yesterday. We have a ton of things going on the show. It's always a very exciting time. And then, of course, every Monday night with you three. Well, you two.
And one day 24/7, right?
Well, that's LaGreca's got us all. We're aiming to this fall. We're threatening all of the walking, talking zombies in SiriusXM to make it happen by this fall.
Well, everyone should definitely check it out. Always entertaining listening to you on Busted Open, Justin. Jimmy, you have a couple shows of your own. Any thoughts for this week, and where can the world find those?
I thought tonight's Raw was okay. It was bookend, the beginning, the ending, and we had that Ilya Dragunov match with Ricochet, which was really good. The stuff in the middle, it was okay for the most part, but there was stuff that really could have been worked on. Like you said, could have been tightened up. But overall, it was okay with some really good matches thrown in. But as far as where you can find me, you're going to get sick of me this week on Wrestling Inc. because you got me tonight. You got me Wednesday after Dynamite, and this Thursday I'm pinch hitting, and I'll be in on the SmackDown show this Friday as well. You can catch me on the Reffing It Up podcast with my good brother in stripes, Brian Hebner and RJ. Last week we had Matt Camp on, had a really, really fun discussion with him. And this week we have one half of one of the greatest tag teams, if not the greatest tag teams of all time, WWE Hall of Famer, D-Von, get the tables. It's going to be a knockout. It's going to be a blast talking to D-Von this week. And of course, my ref and rants on all my social media platforms from Monday to Friday. just spitting it out there, just giving little critiques here and there, trying to tighten the screws, as we say, not to tear down, but hopefully to help.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you said one half of the best tag teams, like, who is it going to be? Better be someone who really is. And absolutely, the Dudleys are one of, you could say they are the best of all time, in my humble opinion. Absolutely, always good stuff listening to you guys. But you can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. I'll be on the AEW after show for Wrestling Inc. on Wednesday. For those of you who think I'm getting paid by Tony Khan, but... Yeah,
obviously they don't listen to you on Wednesdays.
Yeah, I look.
Well, listen
Tony,
to me,
Tony
anyway.
Khan. Send the check, buddy. No, I'm going to be on doing commentary for Prestige Wrestling on May 16th. So you can check that out on IWTV streaming live. It's going to be a good one. We got Shelton Benjamin versus Josh Alexander. We've got Alex Shelley versus Timothy Thatcher. We've got Leo Rush is going to be there. We've got Jeff Cobb's going to be there. Lots of great names. It's going to be really fun. Check that one out. I think that does it for us, fellas.
You got to do me a favor, though. I got to see that Shelton Benjamin, Josh Alexander match. That's going to be one hell of a match.
I'm so excited for that one. It's going to be a fun one. You guys know what?
Send me a link. Again, it might be one match of the week candidate.
I'll send you both the link because I want you both to see it. And you can mute me if you want, or you can listen to me with
No, we'll just do this we'll just do this while you're talking.
We're all gonna have to gaslight Mike Martin, but I love you. We're gonna gaslight you. We're all gonna click and have everyone say no one hears it. that does it for us. Thank you guys so much for joining. Follow at Wrestling Inc. and be sure to tune in to NXT's after show tomorrow. I'm hitting the end stream button.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.